14. The Hunter and the Hunted. Octavia ran down the streets, cursing her skirts and corset with every step. She'd always hated being restrained by women's clothing. Meanwhile, Esther loped with feral speed and slyness. She darted here and there, leaping over fences and, finally, scrambling down the gaslit pathways in Regent's Park. Octavia followed, and once she reached the open grass, she kicked off her shoes, snatched them up with one hand, and lifted the hem of her dress with the other so she could run full tilt. The gaslights were soon of little use, because Esther had slipped into the bushes off the path. Octavia chased her through a grove of trees and more bushes, past a statue. She was only 5 yards away. "I've got you now." She'd have to tie this girl up, but with what? The stays from her corset would be too difficult to get at. Her sash had her secret pouch, she couldn't lose that. Her hair ribbons. They would be long enough to tie several tight knots. She pulled off her bonnet, letting it drop to the ground, then felt around for the ribbons and yanked them out. Her long hair fell behind her. But in that moment she lost sight of Esther. Octavia kept running straight until she saw a few branches move and heard a thunk. She burst through a line of bushes to discover a knoll, a fountain, and another Greek statue, but no wolf girl. She looked behind the statue. No sign of her. But there was a manhole lid set in the cobblestones. She'd heard stories of men who worked below London clearing the clogged sewers. Not a place she'd like to have tea, but it would be the perfect hidey hole. Octavia leaned over and grabbed hold of the cover's edge. She dug her feet into the ground, but was only able to lift the lid an inch before dropping it with a clang. There was no way in heaven that Esther could have lifted it. Octavia found a thick branch, but it snapped the moment she'd tried to pry the lid off. Esther couldn't have hidden down there. But then Octavia remembered the way Esther had thrown her, across the room. How her ribs still ached. This girl was unnaturally strong. At last, perspiring, Octavia gave up on trying to lift the lid and on capturing Esther. In any case, she had more than accomplished her assigned task. Esther was free of the orphanage, at least, though Octavia wasn't certain that was a good thing any more. However, if Esther was in the sewers, she certainly seemed tough enough to face any danger she might find down there. Octavia slipped her shoes on, took one last look around, and walked out of the park. It was a few minutes before a cab passed down Hadford Street. She hailed it, and as the cabbie drove to the address she'd been given, she wrote her observations of Esther's condition using a pencil and a piece of paper she'd tucked into her sash earlier. She bit her lip, concentrating. Each bump made her hand jerk. It was hard to tell in the dark if the note would be readable. Octavia had the driver wait while she walked up the front path of the three-story mansion, passing through a large iron gate. One corner of the house was a tall turret, its slit windows lit. The letterbox at the front door was also in the shape of a turret. She dropped her letter into the drawbridge of the letterbox. When the hinge closed, a soft bell sounded. She hurried to the carriage. Back at the Langham, she walked to the far side of the hotel and waited until Bond Street was clear. She checked to be sure no one was looking out the hotel windows, then hiked up her skirts and tucked them in her sash. She scaled the faux balconies to her room and swung herself, legs first, into the open window. It wasn't exactly a graceful entrance. Her dress caught on the iron latticework, and she felt half undressed by the time she'd squeezed in, kicking her way past the long, heavy curtains. As she fought to tidy her skirts, she envied men and their trousers. Her perfect life would be a place where she could wear trousers all the time. On an island, perhaps, with a prince.
"Out for a stroll, were you?"
a gruff voice snapped. Octavia swallowed her panic and answered as calmly as she could. "I needed a bit of fresh air."
Is there no fresh air outside the front door?"
The voice came from the far corner of the room. "Sometimes a lady desires a little privacy." It was too dark to see anything. She had sewn a small opening in her dress, so she could speedily slip her stiletto from a sheath worn around her left thigh. She grasped the handle. "I have one chance," she told herself. "Strike hard."
"Reaching for your weapon?" he asked.
She heard shuffling, a squeak of the floor. She caught her breath.
No, no. Only smoothing out my dress.
Then remove your hand. Slowly.
She did, leaving the stiletto in its sheath.
I'm afraid you have me at a disadvantage, sir. I don't know your name.
And I do not know yours, apparently. And therein lies the problem.
He chuckled.
Lies. The problem.
Yes, that is a very apt description of the situation. Lies, lies, lies.
She had no idea what he was going on about. He sounded as though he had a slate loose. Her eyes had adjusted, and she could make out the lines of her bed, the dresser beside it, and in the corner on a chair, a lumpy shape. She considered the distance, 3 or 4 yards at most. She could leap over and strike in a heartbeat. However, it was likely that he had a pistol.
"Why are you mumbling on about lies?" she asked.
"Because lies are what you are cloaked in."
"And how would you know that?"
She took tiny, imperceptible steps toward him, only to discover, to her horror, that there wasn't a man in the chair, just a coat dropped onto it. Her heart thudded.
"I only want the truth from you. What is your name?"
She was certain the voice was behind her now. She smelled smoke.
"My name is none of your concern."
"Well, none of your concern. It is a pleasure to meet you. Again."
Again. His voice was indeed familiar, but it was so guttural and strained she couldn't recognize it. He wheezed and grunted. She took some consolation in this. Perhaps he was sick or even wounded. Maybe he had no intention to harm her. If he'd been an agent from Russia or Germany, her throat would have been slit by now. Unless, of course, he was planning to dispatch her after this strange interrogation.
"Are you unwell?"
she asked, turning slowly toward his voice and looking for his shape in the dark.
"Oh, so now you're concerned for my health. How sweet, Miss Featherstone."
A smile crossed her lips.
"Mr. Wellington," she said to the curtains, "if, indeed, that is your real name, it is such a pleasure to meet you again."